News happens so fast here, Heather, and it's hard to stay on top of things. But big picture, and you and I were chatting about this before we came on here, but is there a plan? What might the plan be? And does the plan change as each day progresses and things develop?
So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that you and I are friends, because I suspect I'm going to say some things to you that I wouldn't say to other people. I think chaos is one of the plans. The idea of creating just such extraordinary movement as quickly as the Trump administration has done is definitely designed to knock people off their pins so that they stop pushing back. They stop even trying to understand what's happening. And they just back away and say, whatever, politics is all the same. I'm not going to be part of it. And let those people do whatever they want to do, which is how you got, for example, one of the ways in which you got the rise of Putin in Russia. But, you know, as you know, I watch this administration very, very carefully. And I tend to think that people operate the way they do for a reason. And it seems to me, if you look at what's happening in the country right now, there are a lot of different moving pieces. And one of the things that really, I think, jumped out to me with the Signal chat in which the most senior members of the Donald Trump administration were essentially planning a military attack on the Houthis in Yemen without the commander in chief was really revealing. Mm. And the number of times that people have asked Trump, what do you think of this? What have you been told about this? And he'll say, I don't know. Tell somebody else, ask somebody else, I don't know. I don't think he's the one calling the shots. It seems to me as if they, and I'll explain who they are in a minute, are using him as a figurehead. And so you have at least three different people who are using him in order to put their own agendas into place. So you have Russell Vought he's the director of the Office of Management and Budget, but he's very closely connected to Project 2025. And we know that a majority of the executive orders coming out of the Trump administration were exactly aligned with Project 2025. And he is tearing down the modern American government because he would like to replace it with a theocracy. And it's interesting how little of what we're going to replace this with you're seeing. And then you've got Elon Musk and the people I keep calling the tech bros, but the people who are represented by the Department of Government Efficiency, and they want to tear everything down for a number of reasons. I think I don't think they're a monolith either. I think they are people who, some of them just think it's fun to blow stuff up. Some of them want, in Musk's case, to gather the contracts from the United States government into his own hands, because I think he's actually in quite bad shape financially. And some of them actually have some sort of, I would call them, juvenile fantasies about rebuilding a technocratic society that they're going to be in charge of. So then you have those people. And then I think you also have Stephen Miller. I thought it was interesting in that Signal chat that Stephen Miller stopped the discussion of what they were going to do simply by invoking Trump. And Stephen Miller is obviously fiercely anti-immigrant, but also, I think, fiercely, he is in it for the cruelty. So I think there's a lot of competing impulses behind the administration. And there may be more as well. But I mean, obviously, outside of the White House, you also have simply what I would call the oligarchs or the old establishment Republicans who want to get rid of the modern American state because they don't like regulation and they don't like taxes. So they're out there, too. But what it seems to me we are seeing is this extraordinarily toxic mix that is in the process of tearing apart the American government that we've lived under since at least World War II. And it is inherently profoundly unstable.
And I look at the whole Signalgate controversy here, and obviously there's the idea of this information, classified, secretive, whatever you want to call it, but clearly vital information that could impact American lives that's being bandied about here on this open communication system. But I take that as only part of the story. The other part being, I suspect they have used this as standard communications because it eliminates a paper trail.
Yeah, no, I think that's clear. And that, you know, Project 2025 alluded to that, and the fact they all jumped on it, and when we say that's illegal, what we mean is that there are laws in place, including the Presidential Records Act, that says that essentially everything that somebody does in power in the White House has to be preserved unless it is explicitly personal. And I remember for some president, there was a discussion about whether or not a photograph of his mother that had been signed by a famous world leader, or you know, given to his mother or something, you know, what belonged to the American people or belonged to the family. And there was actually sort of a back and forth about that. So yeah, I think they did that. But I think there's actually something else around here, which I keep coming back to, and you saw it in the Signal chat, and you see it in the disdain with which White House correspondent Caroline Leavitt talks to the press, and you see it certainly with Vice President J.D. Vance and the way he talks, and you certainly see it with Elon Musk. And what I see is the idea that these people, that is the people directing the country, are better than the rest of us, and they are doing what is best for us, even if we don't want it. And even if it's going to cost lives, because they know something that we don't, and or they're smarter than us, or they're better connected than us. And it keeps bringing me back to this theme that runs through American history, where, you know, that's what the elite enslavers said as well. We need to get rid of democracy because we're the ones who understand how things really should work. And that, you know, it's hard to call that out because it's so inherent in everything they say. But I come back to the fact there's two ways to look at the world, either that some people are better than others and have the right to rule, or that we're all equal and we have a right to have a say in our government and to be treated equally before the law and have equal access to resources. And they're just so blatant about you little people. You know, we don't, you know, what's that thing in that movie in Princess Bride where he says, you know, some of you are going to have the prince or the king says, some of you are going to have to die, but I'm okay with that, you know?
Are you looking right over my shoulder at the Princess Bride poster there?
Oh, is that what that is? I didn't know you were a Princess Bride fan.
Oh, yes, very much so.
How so? Where'd you get, what is your
Oh,
connection?
I've just always loved the book, loved the movie. We had Mandy Patinkin on the show, who told a wonderful story about Andre the Giant. That if you love the Princess Bride movie, you'll love this story that apparently being in that movie meant so much to him that he used to carry a VCR, VHS copy of that film with him wherever he went to remind people, I was in this movie.
Oh, that's so sweet. So, you know, on social media, there's my name and that's TDPR. The TDPR is the Dread Pirate Richardson.
Oh, I love
Because
it.
I mean, there's a long story behind it, but it was a joke that I took, obviously, from the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Love that. That's great. One more thing on the whole Signal chat. Do you think that Mike Waltz was a source for Jeffrey Goldberg, and that's why he's in there, and that's why Waltz has been so quick to suggest, I don't know, his name just got sucked into my phone somehow.
So, I mean, I don't know the answer to that. I will tell you, it would not surprise me at all to know that there were journalists and politicians in each other's phones. I have both journalists and politicians in my phone, and it's not because we're besties at all. It's because if you're traveling in that world, you know, sometimes people reach out to you with information, or sometimes they reach out to you with a question. That itself, I don't have a problem with at all. Actually, I quite like it because it means that there is sort of a web that you can there that there's information change, you know, changing hands. It doesn't mean anybody's using it badly, but what I have a problem with is if you are freaking dumb enough, first of all, to use Signal, second of all, to talk about anything secret on an unsecure channel, and third, to talk about our troops in such a way that you put their lives at risk, and then to deny it. I got to tell you, I am aghast at this. I'm a college professor, and from the time we went into this new world of the internet, it has been hammered through our brains that, you don't even leave somebody's exam like stapled outside the door because that's a violation of their privacy. You have to be very, very, very careful about rules. I won't put a student's name except to praise them. I would do that in an email because anything can be hacked. You don't want to say, I'm worried this student is going to fail out or is cheated because somebody could get access to that. Right. And I'm sitting here thinking, if I screw up with that, I always worry I'll do the worst thing and somebody will run for Senate and then they'll turn up an email from me where I complained about the person, which I don't do because of that. But the idea that these people with whom we have entrusted the lives of the people who are keeping us safe are that cavalier with that information and with what we now know were human-sourced pieces of information about the person that they were going after in that apartment complex.
Right. And people apparently on the ground in Yemen, right?
I am speechless. Yeah. I am offended. I am horrified. And I am absolutely disgusted. And the fact that heads are not, the fact that heads didn't roll within 12 hours is a complete indictment, aside from anything else, of this administration.
All right. Well, we talk about the plan, whether there is one, where it's coming from. How does the whole Greenland thing figure into this? Because I keep looking at it and saying, what does Trump want from this? Because it's clearly it's not about annexing Greenland. There's something there that he wants, whether it's for his business, whether it's to somehow help Putin. I don't know what it is. Do you have any thoughts?
I do have thoughts. I mean, of course, I'm not sitting on the inside of whatever is going on there. And I will remind you that this was never brought up at all during the campaign.
Right.
And that I'm still not 100% convinced that Trump knows what he's doing, that, it seems a lot of stuff he's simply not aware of. Mm. So maybe Trump doesn't want Greenland. Maybe he can't find Greenland on a map. who knows? But there's at least two very obvious reasons to go after Greenland. And one, of course, is precious metals and the kinds of important metals and important minerals that the human race needs to continue its race into the internet age. And remember, Elon Musk is desperate for those things because he needs it for his push to Mars. And that push to Mars is actually worth keeping on the radar screen. We can talk about it if we have time. So there is the rare earth minerals. So that's a big deal. And we're also, by the way, going to see a big fight over going into the Arctic as the ice melts. There's going to be a huge fight over that. And of course, into the planets. This is one of the reasons that people talk about mining in different planets, because they have a lot of these minerals. So there's that. There's the physical nature of that. But then there is something that is ideological. And this is at least equally problematic. And that's that, remember, when Vladimir Putin went into Russia, especially the second time in 2022, he'd invaded in 2014 and he invaded again in 2022. And he also has invaded other countries as well and gotten less of a reaction from that. But the whole premise of him invading Ukraine is an attempt to destroy the concept of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, because NATO is predicated, that it is built on the idea of the United Nations, which came out of World War II. Quite literally, the Allies in World War II were the signatories, with the addition of four other countries, to the United Nations. And if you look at the mission statement of the United Nations, respecting boundaries, borders, and sovereignty is central to the post-war order. It is central. So one of the things that Putin is trying to do by getting concessions of land, for example, in Ukraine, is to say, forget that order. Big countries can take anything they want. Now, the United States has stood very firmly against that. And it's happened in a lot of other places that people really aren't paying that close attention to. But, there have been attempts to push over the borders of Guyana, for example, and different places where you want to break that principle. If Trump does what he says and invades Canada or Greenland, that whole premise is in the trash, because you've got a big country doing that. And, I think that that's very much on the table. I also think there's something interesting in that I think Putin obviously has wanted desperately to break the NATO alliance, to break the US and Europe apart. And the idea behind that is that there will be spheres of influence that, you know, the China can have Asia and Russia
Right.
can have Europe and America can have the Americas. But one of the things that's really interesting that has emerged from this is that, in fact, the penetration of the Russians into the US government is, I think, one of the things that history books is going to see as a continuation of the Cold War, but one in which we are not right now doing very well. And interestingly enough, I think the idea was to break that alliance apart and with the expectation that it would collapse. And what we have seen instead, and it's very early days, so the whole thing could collapse, but the Europeans have worked together with other countries like Canada to take over for the US. Especially Emmanuel Macron in France has really been working to say, okay, you're not gonna defend Ukraine, we are. And pointing out that Europe has a lot more people than Russia does and has the ability to stand up behind Ukraine. And if that happened, I mean, one of the things that I think about a lot is what does a post-Cold War order look like? So Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken tried to create these sort of communities of interest where it didn't matter if you were a communist country or not that there are that many left, but, you know, it didn't matter what your government was. If you cared about fentanyl, you were welcome at the table and they would talk about ways to deal with fentanyl. Or if you were worried about immigration over America's southern border, which is not only about the US and Latin America, it's also about people coming from Haiti and people from coming from China and other places as well, you were welcome at the table. And if you were worried about the Middle East, even, you know, no matter where you were on that, you were welcome at the table. And that's one of the things in the about the Middle East crisis that Americans never paid attention to is that the Arab states were all very busily working to try and resolve that issue as well. And even writing op-eds in American papers that nobody but me seemed to read. I'm exaggerating. Somebody else must have read them. But that was their idea. And Trump just did not understand it. And now you have in that signal chat, Hegseth going, well, Biden walked away from deterrence and we're going to make a statement. And in fact, what statement did they make? I mean, except that they have a lot of weapons and they can kill people.
Right.
And that's Cliff Schechter wrote a piece that has been reported in a number of places, including on his Substack called Blue Amp, that in a normal administration, if you were going to do a missile strike, you would have diplomacy around it and have a plan to how this fit into a larger picture and what you wanted to accomplish. But they basically just did an airstrike and they're like, yeah, fist bump.
Yeah.
And there's
fire
been nothing,
emojis.
Yeah. And there's been just nothing around it. So I think one of the things, the whole Greenland thing sounds stupid, but these people who are not taking it seriously, I think are missing that it is a sort of a teeny way. Not that it's teeny to any of the people involved, but it's a small way to achieve a gigantic goal.
We're talking with Heather Cox Richardson here on Downtown. Let's look at the domestic situation and what everybody seems to be concerned about. And I wonder, is there a red line for the Republican Party? And is that red line Social Security?
So, you know, this is just so fascinating because, of course, you expect that the Republicans would have had their heads explode over the signal scandal, which is huge. I mean, I just can't emphasize that enough. I'm not sure there's anything comparable in our history. But one of the things that you are seeing happening right now with the cuts that are being made through the Department of Government Efficiency, which I think is Musk, but also a lot of the attacks on the domestic side of the ledger are ones that are embraced by Russell Vogt and Project 2025. But what's really interesting to me about this moment is that we know, and there was a fabulous piece before the election in the Wall Street Journal about this, that the counties that are that tend to vote Republican, that are dominated by Republicans, now at a county level, not at a state level,
right,
but at a county, which is kind of more important for what I'm going to say, at a county level, the ones that are heavily Republican are far more dependent on government money than counties that are Democrat that are Democratic dominated. And the large reason for that is because the Democratic dominated counties usually are urban, and that means there are more younger people in them. So they need less Social Security, they need less Medicaid, they need less Medicare, and so on. But also other things as well, like the money that comes in through the National Institutes of Health and the money that goes to universities and all that. But so one of the things that we are seeing that I think is a real kind of like a, I think of like a blender, you know, where it messes everything up. You know, you throw in strawberries and bananas, and then pretty much you get it, you know, you get a brand new smoothie, right? Is all these cuts, they're hurting everybody, and they're definitely hurting the United States and so on and so forth. But the individuals they are hurting are overwhelmingly Republicans. And the question is, for me, what happens, and I keep saying that like I'm the only one who matters, but what I mean is that this is, I spend a lot of my day sitting and thinking, and these are the problems I think about. So what matters to me in this is a population of people who have probably for their whole lives, since at least the 1980s, have voted Republican because they believed that government assets or government monies were going to somebody that they didn't like. People of color, Black Americans, women, you know, the libs, whatever. And they're discovering that they're actually the ones on the chopping block. The farmers, for example, who were so badly hit by USAID, or, you know, people who are watching Social Security go up in smoke. And I don't know what happens when you have lived your life, your political life, but also their social and cultural and religious and all sorts of different aspects of that, believing a certain thing, only to discover that the people who were warning you were right. And I don't, you know, I'm very interested in the way minds work. I don't know.
Well, because we saw people willing to die of COVID rather than admit they were wrong.
That's right. And so, you know, we know political scientists will tell you that even at the nadir of right-wing extremism, you know, the numbers are never going to fall below about 20%. I mean, so even at the very end, Hitler had, I think, about 22% popularity. And that's not necessarily people who loved him. Sometimes people are just contrary, or sometimes, you know, whatever. But this process of watching somebody go from, you know, I want to own the libs, to I've just destroyed my life, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what that looks like. And I wish we didn't have to see.
Well, and we may see that also in the area of healthcare in this country, as you watch that measles outbreak expand in Texas, go beyond the borders of Texas, and then some of the behaviors of Bobby Kennedy Jr. Where's Bill Cassidy, who, boy, he was going to hold Bobby Kennedy accountable for this, and now he's bringing in a vaccine denier to do a study of the link between autism and vaccines that's already been debunked in a number of other studies. And then he's telling people in Texas, cod liver oil, mega doses of vitamin A, that's the way to go. And now we have kids hospitalized in Texas because they took too much vitamin A rather than just go get vaccinated.
It's really heartbreaking. But that's actually where you and I started on this, which I think is important. A number of Republican senators, you know, somebody asked me once, what's the thing that surprised me most about all this? And honestly, the thing that surprised me most is that so few Republican senators tried to hold the line, because the full MAGA senators, there aren't that many of them.
No.
13, 14. The rest of them are not MAGA. They're Republicans, but they don't like Trump. They don't like what he's doing. And one of the things that I kept emphasizing, and you read me, I know you saw it before Trump took office, is the number of times I talked about the Senate preserving its power. Because we have to have these three branches have their own power, or the whole system falls apart. And I really expected that we would see some Republicans hold the line. And we know, for example, now that Joni Ernst, who ended up supporting Pete Hegseth, even though she initially said she was against him, it turned out it looks like they had blackmail on her. I don't know what was going on with Cassidy, but One of the places to put real pressure right now is on those Republicans. And to say, you know, this is you. You did this. And you saw Jen Rubin of the Contrarian do that the other day over the Signal thing when she said, hey, Joni Ernst and Tom Tillis from North Carolina, who said he was going to vote against Hegseth and became the central vote that put him over the top, even while there were people in the room that he had promised he would vote against him. She said, you know, hey, Joni Ernst and Tom Tillis, how are you feeling about your vote for Hegseth right now? Because this is on you as much as it's on them. And that, I think, is going to be really important to keep pushing because, you know, this is really not about Democrats or Republicans or independents in this moment at all. I mean, I think all those things are up in the air. It's about whether first of all, American democracy and the American nation as it was on January 19th is gone. We will never get back our international standing, not in your lifetime, not in my lifetime, probably not in our children's lifetimes. It is what it is. Maybe it'll turn out better for the world. I can see that. Who knows? But that's gone. But if we are going to maintain American democracy and maybe even rebuild it better, those of us who care about it have to come together regardless of what the letters are after our names, because that's what's on the line in this moment. And that kind of pressure on certain senators would not be a bad thing.
No, and I've said this to a number of people. We thought the Senate would save us, those institutionalists who wanted to protect that balance of power, but that's not going to happen. We thought the courts would save us, and some of them are trying, but when we reach that inflection point that may come, where Trump just blatantly refuses to go along with whatever the courts say, ultimately it's going to be up to the people to step up and do this. And that's going to require more than just Democrats, more than just Never Trumpers. But I feel like we're closing in on that point because we're seeing it have an impact, whether it's these town halls, the town halls with cardboard cutouts of Republican congressmen who are afraid to show up, or even here in Maine, a Democratic congressman who's afraid to meet with his constituents. It's up to
Was
us
that
now.
true?
Well, I haven't seen any town halls with Jared Golden.
Interesting, because you know I've thought about doing some. Not that I'm running for office, but you know the idea of people getting together and talking about what's important to them is crucial. And that doesn't mean you have to agree with the Democrats or the Republicans. I think there's a lot of, you know, as we know, everything we look at says that Americans are actually agreed on most things. But the problem is our politicians aren't reflecting that. And you know, one of the things I say to people, because I get letters all the time from individuals who say, you know, I'm represented by, and for some reason the person who always comes up is Ron Johnson. And he's never gonna, you know, he's never gonna listen to me. And I'm like, no, he's not. But there are, you know, unless he is a god, which you know, I haven't seen any signs of, he's not gonna be here forever. And the people who are listening right now are the next generation of politicians. And that, you know, the more that, you know, remember, politicians want to stay in power almost always. And the more that they can feel they're not going to stay in power unless they start to do what people want, the more we're going to see a government that reflects what we actually want to have happen. And that's what we did in the 1850s, again, with people from Maine. Who stepped up to the plate and walked away from party affiliations and said, listen, we don't like each other on issues of immigration or on finance or internal improvements or any of the things that actually are still issues. But by God, we can agree that we don't want to be ruled by the elite Southern enslavers who are going to, you know, basically get rid of American democracy. And from that, we got two entirely new political parties that have been with us ever since.
Well, things are happening fast, so you never know where we'll go. I want to talk next time. Let's talk more next time about this idea, and we've chatted about it earlier, of politics as an abusive relationship, because I love that notion.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to. I always love talking to you, Rich. So anytime.
We'll do it. Thanks, Heather, as always.
It's good to see you.